This episode is brought to you by Odd Mo's Pizza in Canby. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, cider, and wine delivered. Call them today at 503-266-8444.
This episode is also brought to you by the Canby Liquor Store. Father's Day is coming, and they really have everything that your dad really wants. From hand-selected gifts you won't find anywhere else, to small batch bourbons and unique craft beers. Find them in the Fred Meyer Shopping Center. Welcome to the Canby Now podcast.
Your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
The 3-year-old son of a Kaiser couple with ties to Canby was found safe Saturday after more than 17 hours alone in the woods near Gilcrest. Well, friends, God is still in the miracle-working business, said family friend Lori Tisdale, who had previously called on people to pray for the boy, Nolan Arian, and his safe return. Another friend's post offering a similar message and call for prayer was shared more than 19,000 times. Parents Sean and Raylene Arian reunited with their son shortly after noon Saturday. Search and rescue teams from 7 counties and numerous other agencies had scoured the woods south of Lapine since the boy went missing around 8 p.m. the previous night. Using canine teams, drones, searchers on foot and horseback, and even a helicopter equipped with thermal imaging. Raylene Arian, whose parents, Don and Donna Morris, are former Canby residents, said Nolan was doing well. He was eating and drinking water, acting like nothing had happened, she said, according to the public Facebook post from Tisdale. The boy reportedly was taken to Sky Lakes Medical Center in Klamath Falls for a checkup, but family and friends said he appeared to be just fine following his much-publicized adventure. The search included teams from Klamath, Deschutes, Cook, Jefferson, Lake, Jackson, and Siskiyou counties, along with air and ground resources from the Oregon Air National Guard, Oregon State Police, the U.S. Forest Service, and Bureau of Land Management. According to an earlier release from the Klamath County Sheriff's Office, the family had been camping in the woods northeast of Gilcrest when Nolan wandered off in the night.
We don't need cops in schools. So says Oregon Student Voice, a youth-led nonprofit organization that has taken aim at removing school resource officers, or SROs, in 18 area school districts, including Canby, Oregon City, Westland Wilsonville, Lake Oswego, Tiger Tualatin, and Colton. SROs are sworn law enforcement officers responsible for safety and crime prevention in schools and are typically stationed at schools while on duty rather than a police station or on patrol. But according to Samantha Block, Oregon Student Voice co-executive director and a junior at Lincoln High School in Portland, SROs, quote, cause more problems than they solve. There are better ways to keep kids, teachers, and school staff safe, she says. The statistics are clear. SROs increase suspensions, expulsions, arrests, and juvenile court visits, especially for students of color. The group cites studies that they say show the presence of SROs does not make students feel safer at school and does not reduce violence, crime, or even school shootings. And an op-ed, Block points out that an SRO stationed at Florida's Stoneman Douglas High School did not stop a gunman from killing 17 people there in 2018. Schools should be safe, and students and staff should feel safe in them, but a police presence in our schools does nothing to accomplish this, she says. It is time for a new approach. The group is circulating an online petition calling for SROs to be removed in the 18 districts. More than 170 had signed up as of last week. Portland Public Schools, the state's largest district, already announced it would discontinue its SRO program last month. Canby has one SRO who operates out of the high school. Chief Brett Smith says the SRO program has a number of goals mutually agreed upon by the Canby School District and Canby PD, including to address criminal activity at schools such as disorderly conduct by trespassers and possession of weapons or drugs on campus, and develop programs and activities that increase students' knowledge of and respect for law enforcement. He readily admits that the district and police department's intentions for the program go beyond reducing violence and enforcing the law. I believe our SRO program has existed for 20 years because the police officers have built relationships with the students while at the same time serving as a resource to students, teachers, and administrators to help solve problems, Smith tells the Canby Now podcast. SROs receive training and counseling and other skills to help them be effective in a school setting and are expected to build relationships with students and faculty. Without exception, the SRO's job often doesn't end at the close of the school day, he says. Part of their responsibilities involve being present at extracurricular activities where much of the trust building between the SRO and the students take place. SROs in Canby often take the lead in the classroom, he says, providing evidence-based teaching on subjects such as bullying prevention, gang resistance, criminal investigation, laws and constitutional rights, substance abuse, conflict resolution, restorative justice, and youth-relevant crimes like dating violence. Officer Greg Larrison has been a coach for high school sports and has even spent time helping students with homework. That said, they do play an important role in addressing crime. Chief Smith says Larrison, Canby's SRO, responded to more than 1,600 incidents in the 2018-19 school year alone, all of which would have been dispatched to uniformed patrol officers if the SRO position did not exist. The chief says Canby PD has received few complaints about the SRO program or officers who have held that role. When asked by the CMP if Oregon Student Voice has received specific complaints about the SRO program in Canby, Block replied yes and no. We were looking for student testimony from your school district in order to learn more about specific incidents involving your SRO, she said. Virtually every student we have talked to has complaints and specific incidents where their SRO acted badly, but we haven't gotten the chance to interview any Canby students yet. This story, as you can imagine, has caused quite a bit of discussion on social media. If you'd like to join the conversation, check out our Facebook page at Canby Now. Canby School District officials gave school board members and parents an early look last week at the proposed hybrid schedules and other guidelines that would be in place to reopen schools and reintroduce some in-person learning this fall amid the continuing coronavirus pandemic. More detailed information and schedules were emailed to all parents Friday afternoon, with virtual presentations being offered for each school throughout this week. The district has another month before it must submit its finalized plan to the Oregon Department of Education. Like most districts in the area, Canby has opted for a hybrid model, one that will combine some in-person instruction with continued distance and online learning each week, something district officials had already signaled last month. The district was forced to this route by the state's strict social distancing rules, requiring students to be kept at least 6 feet apart at all times, and giving every person inside a school building a minimum of 35 square feet of space. Administrators tried various scenarios to solve this riddle, including utilizing space at the district's former Ackerman Middle School, but it came down to a question of staffing. And with Canby Schools already projecting a budget shortfall, it's unlikely the district will be able to bring on more teachers. Students will be divided into small groups of 12 to 20 and will have limited interaction with other students throughout the day, which is meant to minimize exposure and facilitate contact tracing in the event of an outbreak. Each school will follow a schedule of 2 on, 3 off, with students being divided into 2 main groups based on their last names. Some exceptions would be available for blended families or to accommodate other needs. All students will be learning from home on Mondays. Canby will also offer a completely online option with assistance from a curriculum provider like Edgenuity, which the district currently uses. While acknowledging the hybrid schedule is certainly disruptive in many ways, and that most would prefer a return to a more traditional instruction, Superintendent Tripp Goodall said that teachers interacting with smaller groups is likely to benefit many students. "I know we've been talking about what it would look like to have a class of 12 students," he said. "I think we're going to be learning a lot about how students learn in much smaller groups." Of course, with everything that's changed, teachers themselves will be learning more than ever before. Goodall chuckled as he explained that in normal school years, administrators begin by revisiting the teacher's manual and discussing what changes may have come over the summer. "This year, it's almost like a brand new, completely new manual," Goodall said. To facilitate the more time the teachers will need to prepare, the Canby School Board on Thursday voted to move the first day of school to Tuesday, September 8th, after Labor Day. This reduces the number of student contact days by 4. Earlier that day, Oregon Governor Kate Brown had issued a statement recognizing that, quote, "school this fall will not look like a normal year," and calling on districts to ensure that underserved and marginalized students get the support and opportunities they need. "We cannot allow our response to this pandemic to increase racial disparities in educational outcomes," she said. "Whether or not kids are in school buildings this fall, we must provide the very best possible education for every single Oregon student while ensuring that the school experience is as safe as possible for everyone, students, educators, support staff, parents, and the community at large." Republican leaders Christine Drazen, state representative from Canby, and Staten-based Senator Fred Garrod have renewed the call on Governor Kate Brown to decouple Clackamas County from its larger, more densely populated, and more COVID-impacted neighbors, Multnomah and Washington counties. Brown made the decision to link the Portland metro area together for future reopening decisions 1 month ago, the same day that she announced Marion County could enter the second phase of her reopening plan, despite having nearly twice as many COVID cases and deaths as Clackamas. County commissioners and Chamber of Commerce leaders had begged the governor to reconsider and allow the three counties to reopen at their own pace, but she has refused. On Friday, Garrod and Drazen, both of whom represent portions of Clackamas County in the state legislature, renewed the call. "Rural Clackamas County shouldn't have to pay the price for the damages caused by violent anarchists in downtown Portland," Senator Garrod said in the statement. "The actions of the larger tri-county area do not represent the Oregonians in the rural part of the county, and the governor needs to acknowledge this difference." Representative Drazen agreed, saying she and her counterpart in the state Senate were echoing the plea of the Clackamas County Board of Commissioners. Coupling Clackamas County with the two most urban and densely populated counties in Oregon is unwarranted and unnecessarily burdens our local communities and businesses who are already struggling during this economic downturn, she said. Clackamas County has seen significantly fewer cases of COVID-19 than its tri-county neighbors, even when population differences are factored in. As of Friday, Washington's case count, 2,105, is nearly double that of Clackamas's, 1,097, while Multnomah's, 3,285, is almost three times as large. However, Clackamas has recorded more COVID deaths, 30, than Washington's, 21. Multnomah County has had 74 residents die from complications of the novel coronavirus, the most in the state. Marion is second with 57. Commissioners received an update on the county's reopening status this week, with Commissioner Paul Savas being particularly insistent that they continue to push for Clackamas to be decoupled from its Portland metro area neighbors. Most commissioners were ultimately in no hurry to reapply for Phase 2, but this appeared to be based primarily on their belief that the request would fall on deaf ears for the state's decision makers.
For returning Clackamas Community College students who endured an online-only spring semester after the coronavirus hit, officials confirmed Thursday school this fall will look pretty much the same. "The health and safety of our community is of utmost importance to Clackamas Community College," CCC President Tim Cook said. "With this in mind, we have opted to move the majority of our classes online for fall. The college is now offering virtual admissions, assisting students getting started at college by video conference, phone, and email. Student services such as advising, veteran services, and disability resource center are also available remotely. For those thinking about earning a bachelor's degree, CCC offers several transfer degrees. Transfer students not only save thousands of dollars on tuition, research shows that community college transfer students are more likely to graduate. CCC is also working to help those who may have lost their job due to COVID-19. The college's workforce services provides employment and training for Clackamas community businesses and job seekers. Their workforce experts prepare job seekers for high-demand jobs and connect them to employers through career planning, training, and placement services. CCC can also help pay for college. Along with scholarships and grants, the college has the support and emergency funding to help not only pay for tuition, but also childcare, textbooks, and transportation. Also, Clackamas Community College Foundation has raised funds to assist students who are experiencing financial hardship related to COVID-19 pandemic that can be used for a wide range of school and living related expenses. For more information about Clackamas Community College and its resources, visit clackamas.edu. Hey, Frankie, do you ever wonder why some businesses aren't, like, more transparent?
Oh, yeah. Like, some of the old buildings downtown are so dark. Get some more windows, you know?
No. I mean, like, transparent as in being open and honest about their business practices.
Oh.
Yeah, like DirectLink is a good example. They don't have internet data caps or charge extra fees for high usage.
Oh, yeah, which is great with all the internet I've been using since this whole COVID situation started.
They also don't charge infrastructure build fees like some other providers, and they're active in our community, too. Check out their philanthropic efforts at directlink.coop/community.
Did you know that they also hold an annual meeting every year where members can talk directly with the board of directors and upper management?
Talk about transparent. You won't see any other companies being that accessible. DirectLink really is here for us. Call 503-266-8111 or visit directlink.coop to learn more today. We'd like to extend our undying gratitude to the CanbyNow Plus member, Carol Dubai. We rely on your monthly contributions to continue to do this work that we love. To find out how you can become one of the coolest people in the world, one of our supporters on Patreon, visit canbynowpod.com/plus.
Right, joining us again on the Can Be Conversation is Ray Hardiman. He's a local energy efficiency engineer and once upon a time was a live performer in the area. But you were telling me, Ray, it sounds like you and your wife, Rebecca, have in recent weeks, I guess, been able to start that up again.
Yes. Yeah, we perform every Friday and Saturday evening, 6 to 8, at Langdon's Grill, and performing, you know, jazz standards and also hits of the 70s and things you'll recognize for the dinner crowd there. So we've been doing that for 8 years and we just kept it going. So
that's great. And even when restaurants were closed down, you kept doing that through live shows on Facebook or something like that. Is that right?
Yeah, actually we did a YouTube channel on Rebecca Hardiman's YouTube channel. We did a live stream every Friday night. Basically the same shows we would put on for the live crowd. We just kept them going on the internet, and we did that up until the end of May, and as soon as we went into phase one for Clackamas County, the restaurant opened, we went back to work and started playing music again. So
that's great.
It's been a blessing.
The live shows you're just doing from home?
We were doing the live shows from our little studio here that we have in our house, yeah.
Oh, okay. Great. What's it been like to be back on stage? Some of us probably can't even imagine what it's like hearing live music anymore.
Yeah, actually, there's a lot of pent-up excitement and interest, and people are really generous with the tip jar, and they're really, you know, we're looking forward to getting out of the house and getting someplace. So they, I would say a lot of new people have come out that didn't normally come out to that location because they say, oh, there's some music here, let's go check this out. And it's been really a very upbeat, positive kind of atmosphere, you know. People are wearing their masks and take them off when they sit down and have their dinner, and enjoy themselves and dance and sing along with the songs. And it's a pretty nice atmosphere in general.
That's great. That's great. That return to normalcy, or at least some form of normalcy, I know is really important for all of our mental and emotional health. And really just music has that ability to help us out in dark times, I think. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Helps you to relax and reset your priorities and keep your mind focused on what's important to you.
Yeah. Well, speaking of which, you have a show coming up here in Canby in the start of next month, August 1st. And we previously had this on the show, and here in a little bit, we're going to replay a large portion of that interview for you guys. But we wanted to do a newer introduction and sort of reintroduce it. But tell folks a little bit about what's going on. Give us the details.
Sure. So we originally had a concert scheduled. It would have been, a normal concert in a larger venue, holds up to 100 people.
Right.
And with the restrictions on occupancy, it's going to be limited. But Canby Chapel is open for business, has been, again, since we were in our phase one approach to things.
Right.
And we actually have two shows that we scheduled. We sold one out. So the later show that would have been at 7 p.m. is completely sold out. We have 10 tickets as today, the 17th, available for the first show, which is going to be at 3 o'clock. And it'll be the way the program works is the doors open a half hour before the show. There's a half hour, 40 minutes of music. There's a half an hour intermission where you can buy wine and there's foods to be purchased there. And then after the intermission, there's another half an hour show. And then everyone is asked to leave and they'll sanitize everything for the next show. So we'll all be following all the guidelines and all the rules, so it should be a very exciting opportunity. Again, only 10 tickets left as of now, so get your tickets now. pioneerchapel.net, that's where you want to go to. It's pioneerchapel.net.
Yeah, thank you. I was going to ask. We have a great record going with you, Hardiman's, where we record these and then the shows sell out before we even get a chance to put it out to people, so we'll see what happens this time.
Yeah, and there will be also an opportunity to live stream, and once this show completely sells out, we'll also have a live stream link available there, too. So.
Oh, cool. That'll be live, or that'll come out after?
That'll be live, okay. As we're performing, so you'll be live streaming, actual live streaming. No editing, no mistakes can be taken out.
That's a little scary.
Live TV. Oh, no more scary than a live performance, right?
I mean, right, right. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Well, Ray, we are, like we said, going to play that interview for you guys. No need to retread everything we already talked about, right? Speaking of recording, so.
No, yeah, it's all on the podcast.
Well, thank you for taking time out to talk to us. Glad you guys are doing well and able to get back to doing what you love with some restrictions and changes, but still bringing joy to people. We appreciate that.
Well, great. Well, thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Well, joining us once again on the Canby Now podcast is local musician Ray Hardiman. Hi, Ray.
Hi.
Get on the mic, Ray. Come on, man. I thought you were familiar with this process.
I am. I was walking away. I want to get that studio fade going on.
Yeah, that was nice. That was a very good process there. Practical effects, they call that, doing a fade just by moving the phone farther away from the microphone.
That's it.
Love that. So, Ray, you've been on the show before with your wife, Rebecca. You guys do a local jazz show at Langdon Farms, done that for quite a few years, and more recently have started doing quite a few events here in Canby with with some of the jazz and also with your Carpenters tribute.
Right.
Rebecca was initially supposed to be on the show today, once again, to promote the Carpenters tribute.
Right,
you guys do it at the Pioneer Chapel.
In March, yep.
Yeah, this is the second time that we've tried to do it. And for the second time, by the time we had it all scheduled and ready to go, you guys were sold out. So
so we'll move on to the next production here.
Right, it's a good problem to have, though.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of The Carpenters are very well known. So
yeah, obviously, and seem to be really popular here in Canby. Yeah, you guys are getting a lot of bookings and stuff for that show as well. I know you've got some things coming up this summer and whatnot. So.
Right, all the way through next Christmas, actually.
So next time we try to do that, just do like three or four shows. Like, you need to do a series, and maybe we'll be able to get you on the show before they're sold out. So so it's just you today, but you're gonna as you mentioned, you got a show coming up and another type of tribute you're kind of doing, right. And as we heard sort of on the intro here, there's a little bit of his music. Tell us about it.
Sure. Yeah. Well, on April 18th at the Canby Chapel, we'll be doing a tribute to Dave Brubeck and his music, mm-hmm. which was Dave Brubeck Quartet.
Okay.
Dave Brubeck and Paul Desmond really were the people that wrote the music for that group. And it'll be his 100th birthday. He passed away a few years ago, but he was born in 1920, so in December of this year, there'll be a big celebration. And throughout the whole year, he has a foundation that he left before he died, and they're having a big initiative to get people to understand who he was and not to forget who he was and understand. So they're helping promote different events in different places. Yeah. So this will be one.
Well, take your opportunity now. Tell us a little bit about Dave Brubeck. Very influential in the history of jazz music.
Yes. He was, like I say, he was born in 1920, and he went was in the Second World War for a period of time and came out of the war and on the GI Bill, went to school for music and studied music and studied classical composing. He grew up in California. His father was a rancher, and he just ended up being attracted to playing the piano.
Yeah,
was able to get some work and did that. And in the latter 50s, he formed this quartet with four people's bass, drums, himself on piano, and Paul Desmond on alto saxophone. And they produced some pretty interesting music for that time. Mm. He was kind of schooled in classical music with a fairly progressive type of composer at the time, Darius Milhaud. Mm-hmm. And he was looking into different types of rhythms and different types of harmonies. And they got a chance to travel to the Mideast, and they heard a bunch of things that you don't hear around here in terms of rhythmic combinations. So they put some music together, and their first major big hit that everybody would know of would be Take Five. That was a very big song back in the 50s. Mm-hmm. And he came out with an album in 1958-59. It was called Time Out. Mm-hmm. And the connection with me is that when I was 13 or 14 years old, my sister had joined the Columbia Music Record program, and they send you music. If you don't order music, they'll send it to you anyway and charge you for it.
Yeah.
And they'll try to get rid of some stuff they don't want.
It's a good business model.
So that album was in that package, and she didn't want to hear it, so she gave it to me. And I listened to it, and I'm like, wow, I was blown away by the music and the complicatedness of the songs and the piano parts.
You talked about that in our last interview, how that kind of
triggered me to
with jazz.
To go into the music. So it's very interesting music. It's not the usual jazz that you might hear, especially in that period of time, in the latter 40s, early 50s. And even to today, most of the music that you hear that would be considered more modern jazz type music incorporates a lot of what he tried to put into his music. So he was one of the pioneers of that type of music.
Yeah. I always appreciate hearing you, Ray, from your knowledge of the history and stuff. But also, I mean, you're a lifelong musician. You have that artistic side to you. But by trade, you're an audio engineer. You have that kind of scientific side as well, looking at kind of what differentiates jazz from other music. And that kind of appeals to your kind of mathematical and logical side of your brain as well.
Right. And this music in particular is complicated. So that's, I like, solving puzzles. Being an engineer, I like to solve difficult problems. That's like a fun thing for me to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really fascinating to hear, everyone, we kind of talk about, love it or hate it. Like, everyone knows what jazz is. You hear jazz. It's fascinating to hear about a time when that jazz did not exist. And to imagine, having been part of that genesis and that history is pretty cool. So is there anything that you can tell us about that initial clip? Or I know you maybe have a couple other clips to show us, and just tell us a little bit more about kind of what Dave was doing back then.
Sure. Well, I thought I have piano here. I thought I'd just give you some basic music history. Won't be long and boring, just basic reason why what he did was different from what everybody else was doing.
All right, listeners, he promised to not be boring. So,
again, you know, jazz music as a whole, you know, started off in Louisiana. It started out as marching band music. So mm-hmm. it was very mm-hmm. 1-2, 1-2. Everybody was marching along with, you know, two beats. And most of the music, all of the music at that point was in 4-4 time. It was okay. just 4 beats to a measure, 1-2-3-4.
Yeah.
There were a few jazz waltzes that came out in the 30s and 40s.
That's still pretty standard, right?
Pretty standard. 4-4? Yeah, that's pretty much what you hear when you think of jazz and swing. It's all 4-4 time.
Yeah.
And that's where Dave Brubeck felt as though the music needed to be, go to the next level. I mean, and this is the same period of time where the country was beginning the space program. I mean, all these things were like, hey, let's try this new stuff, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so he wanted to do some experiments in rhythm. That's really what he did. So he also did things with harmony. He tried to incorporate what they call polyharmonic, polyrhythmic, and also these odd time signatures all together at the same time. So I can give you an example. All the jazz music you would have heard back in the 40s was, you know, in 4-4 time. So it would have just been, that was basically 4 beats.
Right. 1-2-3-4.
And what he did is he took this other Middle Eastern type of rhythm, this 5-4 rhythm, and he created a song that, you know, you probably heard this beginning of it is. Mm-hmm. That's actually in 5-4 times. That's 1-2-3-4-5. 1-2-3-4-5.
Mm-hmm.
Not easy to dance to.
Right.
But people absorbed it because it was different and it was unique.
Yeah.
And the song we started off with that I can play through more of at this point. It's actually in what is 11-4 time. So it's not just 5 beats to a measure. There's 11 beats to the measure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to count. You can't tap your foot to it, but
right.
it definitely has its own type of attraction to you, especially, you know, as a listener, but also, you know, as a musician, you know, it's a challenge to try to improvise over this type of rhythm. But I guess, you know, if I want to play that through a little bit more, you can hear some of the solo that Paul Desmond
did. What is the song called?
This was from the second album. It's called Time in Outer Space.
Okay.
And it's called 11-4.
Okay.
That's the name of the song.
There you go.
So here we go. Well, let's do some of that.
Yeah, because I'm a boring white guy, you know, I just sort of like bob my head to 4-4 rhythm anyway, just because that's all I can do. But I can hear that there's a lot more going on there than the normal rhythm.
Yeah, kind of bounces around a little bit. And the way it's divided, there's 11 beats in the measure, but there's two 3-4 pieces, a 2-4 piece, and another 3-4 pieces, and it repeats itself over and over. So, like I say, from a musician's point of view, that would be challenging to play, challenging to improvise over. So that's what we try to do, is to make that as interesting as we can.
Cool. So tell us a little bit more about the show that's coming up, or maybe play something else for us. But just as far as like, is it the idea of the show sort of a little bit of what you've been giving us so far, kind of an exploration of his music, or is it more like a kind of just a fun night? Like what's sort of the vision for it?
Yeah, no, it's actually a combination of the two. The goal of this centennial initiative, they call it, is to, like I say, raise people's understanding and awareness of the music. So what we're going to do is we're going to play through, we'll play that composition, we'll play a number of other compositions, and then we'll give some of the
bit of the education.
The education of why, when did he write it, what about it is different, parts of it to listen to. So it's somewhat informative as well, because, you know, his band was, you know, it's your typical jazz band. You have bass, drums, piano, and a saxophone player, say. Well, then the bass player is usually just playing four beats.
Right.
The drummer is just playing time.
Right.
The piano player is kind of filling in the gaps.
And that, I wonder how they don't get so bored, right? Just like boom, 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 boom. Yeah.
And in his music, they each of the players has a separate rhythmic contribution. So as a whole, you'll hear one sound, but if you heard each of them individually, you'd say, wait a minute, something's wrong here. That doesn't sound right. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
But you put it all together and it sounds really
very orchestral in that sense.
Right. Yeah. Everybody contributes their piece to the pie.
Well, I think we have time for maybe one more that you could share with us.
Sure. Well, there was another song that he wrote that was, I can play it on the piano. I'll just play the melody of it, but it was written in 1964 when they had the World's Fair and, there was a Unisphere, which was the globe of the world, being up there. Mm-hmm. And so this song is called Unisphere. It's in 5/4 time. Again, the common odd time signature that you don't usually see. So I'll just play a little bit of that, and then you can go from there.
Cool. I was wondering how you were going to do the fade if you're going to lift up your keyboard and start walking away, but you didn't.
Can't do it. Gotta stop.
Slightly unplug the cord. I don't know.
Dead stop.
No, that was great. And it is funny how it kind of keeps you on your toes in that way. Like you sort of get in a rhythm a little bit, like you're expecting the normal kind of thing. And then it sort of zigs when you're expecting a zag. So I like that.
Unexpected bump there.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you so much for telling us a little bit about this history and some music that we didn't know too much about.
And it'll be a live show. It'll be a piano, full grand piano. There'll be a bass player, drummer, and an alto saxophoner that plays similar to the way Paul Desmond plays.
Yeah.
Some great local musicians. We have Craig Snizel. Kurt Deutscher is playing drums, and a saxophone player, Laird Holling, will be playing saxophone. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, as much as we love our little studio here in Canby, like the chapel is just an amazing venue for musicians, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Sound is perfect.
Perfect for piano music.
Little room. Not too big, not too small.
Right,
so it's perfect.
Well, grab your tickets fast because these guys have a habit of selling out, apparently, when they play at the chapel. So, Ray, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with 3 realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life. Mm-hmm.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
While the Clackamas County Fair, sadly, is canceled, at least one traditional offering will be back on the menu later this summer. Thanks to a partnership with Wilco, the nonprofit, volunteer-run Oregon Dairy Women will be taking their world-famous Red Barn ice cream on the road to communities across 6 weekends this summer. And they'll be here in Canby, August 21st through the 23rd. That weekend, which is when the 2020 fair would have been held, the Oregon Dairy Women ice cream stand will be open at the Canby Wilco store, serving up cones in vanilla, chocolate, and beloved swirl. I mean, who doesn't get swirls? Am I right? And shakes, Oreo. We can stop there, but we'll continue Mary and Berry, strawberry, chocolate, and vanilla from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Oregon Dairy Women President Becky Highmerle recently joined the Canby Now podcast for a phone interview. We asked her to give us the scoop.
Okay, well, this is just a normal summer for you guys, huh?
Not so much normal, no.
Yeah. So what does a summer normally look like for you guys? What kind, like, how many events and things do you do? And then we'll talk about what's happening this summer.
Well, normally, okay, so the way our organization works is different counties have units.
Okay.
And those are the ones that you would normally see doing activities
at the fair
and maybe having ice cream at the local fairs.
Yeah.
And then at the state fair is where the Oregon Dairy Women would sell their ice cream. And we also do a lot of activities with our Dairy Princess ambassadors there as well.
How long has that been going on, the ice cream sales at the fair? Because that's obviously probably the most visible kind of thing that most people see you do and what you're associated with. I know that's true for me. That's what I think of when I think of Oregon Dairy.
You know what? Somebody just sent that to me the other day, and I will get that to you.
Okay.
Go ahead and ask me your next question.
Yeah, no problem. I guess, what is that like? You mentioned that you were selling ice cream on Friday, so I assume you're part of the stands and things. Is it fun to do the fairs?
It is fun. I mean, it's long days and you're tired, but we're all volunteers in our organization. And the proceeds from our Red Barn ice cream sales go to support our Dairy Princess Ambassador Program, which is our outreach program, and it's an educational program, and then a personal development and scholarship program for the young girls that are involved with it.
Okay. And so when you have a year like this and you find out that all the fairs are canceled, that's a big hit to the revenue for your organization, yeah?
Very much a major hit to us for revenue. We've been fortunate that last year we had a tremendous state fair, and so that's helped us balance a little bit of our budget for this unexpected season that we've had this year. But it's still, I mean, we're definitely going to feel it. We did have one employee, and with all the cancellation of events and things, we weren't able to continue to employ her. So I'm hoping that as soon as this turns around, that we can get our program back to what we would consider normal.
Right. Bounce back.
Right.
So where did the idea come from that let's see what we can do as far as doing some pop-up shops this summer?
You know, a few of us girls were talking, and we mentioned that at first we were thinking we would just do it for something positive for one of the communities to experience or look forward to.
Yeah.
And
give us something to look forward to, right?
Right. It was just like going to be a fun day, like in and out type of thing. And then one of our members, Michelle, has a good relationship with Wilco Farm Stores. And so she brought to the table the partnership with working with them, and it turned into much more than what we were originally anticipating, but a huge opportunity that we're super excited and grateful for. We just had a super weekend this last weekend, and hoping that we can keep the interest and momentum in all the different communities that we're visiting.
Oh, that's awesome. And I'm glad, because, I mean, if you only did this in, like, Newburgh, Canby, we'd be pretty mad, Becky, I have to say. So we'd have some words. No, I'm just kidding.
So we've had the Red Barn since 1959.
Oh, okay, cool. That's a long time.
Nice. Yep.
Is this the first year, probably since then, that you're not doing it?
At the State Fair, yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sad.
But we have had this ice cream booth. We call it our Red Barn on Wheels, because we have the stationary at the State Fair, and then this one is on wheels, and it's like a food trailer, and we have taken that to lots of events every year. I don't know how long we've had the one on wheels, but it's been one that our county units can rent out and use in their own local communities. And we also use it at State Fair and the Oregon Ag Fest and events like that.
Cool. Well, tell me a little bit more about this first weekend, what it was like. Where were you guys?
We were at the Salem Wilco.
Salem, okay. And did you hear comments from people? Or are they just so glad that they got to see you this summer after all? Or got some Oregon Dairy Woman ice cream?
I was super surprised. I mean, I know that we're a popular stop at the State Fair, and I've been volunteering for many years already, and I've got many more years of volunteering to go. But I knew we were popular, but I didn't realize the amount of people that said, this is the reason we go to the State Fair, or I'm so glad at least something is right this summer. Like, I didn't realize just what a cornerstone piece of the State Fair experience that it was for people.
Yeah.
So that was really, for me, it was really heartwarming and exciting. I mean, sometimes at State Fair, you might get a grumpy customer or two that's been standing in line a long time. And every once in a while, but you know, it's safer. You've got places to go and things to do. And here it was like they were there to get ice cream, and they were just so full, so happy, and so appreciative. And it was just really exciting. When I was working on Friday, a younger guy paid it forward and bought the people behind him ice cream, and that ended up carrying on for 13 transactions. Experienced it. I'm not going to say nobody's ever bought somebody else's ice cream before, but I have never experienced it. And then to have it chain link like that for that many was really exciting.
That is so cool.
And then we also had some companies sending people on their lunch breaks. And so we had like 17 milkshakes, and that was the most we've ever had in a single order.
Oh my gosh. Getting closer.
So that's exciting. I don't know. The people behind them probably weren't totally thrilled with it because it took us a while to fill it.
Right.
But we had lots of people order 9, 10, 11 milkshakes for their offices and stuff. So, and I never even thought about that being like
a thing.
A lunch stop.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought that was cool. Really appreciate the support there. But it's just, yeah, I don't know.
You know, they probably just said it was for their office and it was just for them.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. The milkshake's a pretty good size. I don't think I one of them. Time, but maybe.
Oh, okay. I'm just being cynical, I guess.
So it was just a really exciting, it was a really positive experience this weekend. Everybody was happy and thankful and appreciative, and the comments that we were hearing were just, I mean, I just never realized how big of a part this, I guess I take it for granted. Maybe I shouldn't. But I've been involved with it for a long time, and I just never thought twice about it, I guess. I don't know. And then we're dairy farmers, so we eat a lot of ice cream anyways.
Right.
And so I don't know if maybe people aren't eating ice cream at home that much, but at least for the soft serve, I think it was a nice treat for them.
Mm, yeah. Well, I do think maybe one silver lining, if there's one out of all this COVID stuff, is I do think it's helped us realize a lot of things that we did take for granted, right? And then hopefully when they come back, we'll appreciate them a little bit more.
I'd like to think you're right. I hope you're right.
Okay.
So I hope that the other communities are excited that we're coming and we get people out for that too. So I'm just really, really thankful and appreciative to Wilco for giving us this opportunity. It turned into way more than what we had ever expected.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's awesome. We're really excited about it, too. We'll definitely be out there when you come visit Canby.
I think, well, we're just excited and appreciate everybody's support and hope that we can bring some smiles to everybody's face, no matter if you're young or old. We're having everybody come out.
Even if it's hidden behind a mask, right?
Yeah, I know. It's funny because you can still tell if people are smiling because you can watch their eyes.
Right, exactly. Like, oh, I'm smiling. No, you're not. Don't lie. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you can't tell I'm smiling. They're like, yeah, look at your eyes. And yeah. I'm like, oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. Some people, it's a little more obvious than others, but yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And we have our state Dairy Princess ambassadors out too. And so they should have a chance to see some dairy royalty while they're out and about. Ooh. And hopefully the weather's good, so it encourages people to want ice cream.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll look forward to it, seeing you out here, Becky. Thank you so much for doing this.
Sounds good. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hey, Frankie, you okay? You seem kind of down.
Yeah, I'm just bummed. I miss going to the Wild Hair. I know you can still get takeout and all, but it's just not the same.
You know they're open again, right?
What?
Yeah, they've been open for a while now. Don't you cover, like, the news?
Hey, I'm only human, okay?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that the Wild Hare and their amazing staff are thrilled to be open again for delicious meals and fun times. They are strictly following all the recommended safety guidelines, and they have the only covered outdoor patio in Canby, with lots of tables spaced 6 feet apart and umbrellas also spaced 6 feet apart and fantastic ambiance. And hey, if you're still more comfortable with carryout, they can hook you up there too. Find their menu and other information online at thewildhairsaloon.net or check them out in Canby and Oregon City. Anything to add, Frankie? Frankie? Oh, I guess he left. God, he must have been really hungry. The Canby Now podcast is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden, so round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. Find more of her work at olivia13.com.
The Canby Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The Canby Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.